Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky here. Andy Kamenetsky joining shortly. Great show for you today. Michael Pina, staff writer and co-host of the Full Court Podcast at Sports Illustrated. He is our guest today. He's got his offseason grades out for every team in the NBA, including the Lakers. Has some things to say about the Westbrook deal that fans may not like.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Michael, how are you? Good to see you.
Great to see you guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Let's start here.
Better than the Lakers, according to you, Mike.
Right. So you've had some good columns. Michael Pina, of course, staff writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Open Floor podcast with Rohan Nadkarni. Really entertaining show that's been putting out some great stuff of late. So make sure you check that out. But Michael, you've had a couple big columns giving out grades on both the Eastern and the Western Conference. You gave your grades for the Lakers. You gave them a C- for what the work they did this offseason. I'm sure the response on social media has been, why do you hate the Lakers? So let's just ask that question. Why do you hate the Lakers?
Yeah, I don't think I'm allowed to visit Southern California anytime soon after that one.
Especially now that everybody seeing this knows what you look like, Michael. I mean, which was a big reason we had you on. We wanted to make sure that our listeners, our viewers,
just exposing me.
Well, we want to make sure they can properly identify you.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, why do I hate the Lakers?
How many segments do you
that
got?
That might
boys?
Have not been the most fair framing of the question. But in fairness, Rohan excoriated you for your low, low grade of a C- the Lakers. He only would have given them a C. So, I mean, clearly you went way low on this.
Why does Sports Illustrated hate the Lakers so much?
It's probably Howard.
So, yeah, it's all Howard. It always is. I mean, for me, you know, last season, it's a couple things. Last season was so weird. And the Lakers are obviously the defending champions. They still have LeBron. They still have AD. And when AD gets hurt in February, I believe they were 20-6 and they had the second best record in the NBA. And, you know, AD misses 30 games with the Achilles injury and the calf injury. LeBron gets hurt. But up until that point, the Lakers were fine. Like, when they won the title, their offense was pretty blah, and then during the regular season, and then kind of kicked into a higher gear in the playoffs. And defensively, they were great, and they still finished last season with the best defense in the entire NBA. So I guess like the first point I had is, what do we take that's serious out of last season that should be able to carry over into this season? And when I look at the Lakers team, I'm like, why not run it back? Like, because I remember coming on the show with you guys before this regular season began and applauding basically everything that the Lakers did. You bring in Dennis Schroeder, you bring in Montrezl Harrell. There were some other moves that they brought, Marc Gasol, that were fine, I thought at the time.
It's a shame you didn't travel out here because of the pandemic. You would have been welcome with open arms.
Sure, exactly. And so I thought that they were good enough to win a championship as constructed then. And if they were to keep basically that roster together with some tweaks around the margins, I think we can both agree that, you know, you need to add more shooting, that would be a championship contender. And you still have LeBron and you still have AD. And when those two guys were on the floor last year, they had a top 10 offense. They had a defense that was just smashing people. And so I didn't really get the there's like two separate roads we can go down here when we're kind of deconstructing their offseason, in my opinion. And one is obviously the Russell Westbrook trade and everything that you lose by trading Russell Westbrook. You lose Schroeder, you lose essentially you lose Caruso, you lose the guys who you actually traded in the deal. Kuzma, Montrez, and KCP. Mm-hmm. who are, you know, they're integral to your identity, your on-court identity, which was defense. And that's why you won the championship primarily 2 years ago. And then the other part of it is, and you can talk about the fit with Westbrook and all that. But the other part of it is the pieces that you brought in and whether or not they are a great fit around AD and a great fit around LeBron, and whether or not they boost the offense without taking too much away from the defense. And so when you kind of look at those two angles, I don't like the Westbrook fit at all, really. I like the pieces that they had that they shipped out and that they lost. I thought that those guys were really malleable and they fit really well. Most of them fit really well around LeBron and AD, and they accentuated both of their strengths. And, you know, you can go one by one with the players that they brought in. I understand the value. Like,
the philosophical question, I think, is the really interesting one, just because, like, Andy and I have talked about this a lot. I think they were a title contender, obviously, before they made the trade, because they had LeBron and AD. And I agree with you. I think that Andy and I have both said we think they beat Phoenix if AD doesn't get hurt. And if they beat Phoenix, they're probably in the finals. I don't know if they win a title, but they're probably in the finals. And they are going to be a title contender with this group too, because they still have LeBron and AD. And, you know, you have Russell Westbrook, who certainly brings something to the table. But like, my big concern with it philosophically was, I think, is a little bit of what you're talking about. Like, it's almost like you're a family of three and you're going house hunting and you end up with a, you know, 7-bedroom, 9-bathroom mansion or whatever. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with it, but it's a lot of house. Like, Russell Westbrook is a lot of house for the corrections, I think, that the Lakers needed. And my big concern is that you've created other things that then with the free agency you have to go fix. I think they did a good job in free agency, but it's all predicated on trading for Russell Westbrook. That is the ground zero for everything else that you're doing. So that was my concern.
Yeah, I just think it's like this complete, it's kind of fascinating because it's like this complete abandonment of continuity. Like, I don't recall, maybe I'm missing someone, but I don't recall a championship winning team making such dramatic changes over a 2-year stretch with the foundational pieces still hanging around, if that makes any sense. So you basically just have LeBron, AD, and Taylor Horton Tucker are the only guys, I think, from that championship winning team. I guess Dwight is back, correct, technically. So I think that's fascinating that you're just willing to abandon your continuity. And in doing so, you kind of have a total disregard for what your identity was. And I keep going back to this, your defense. And so when you bring in Kent Bazemore, Trevor Ariza, Carmelo Anthony, Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn, Wayne Ellington, like, a lot of these guys just, I think the Lakers are going to be a pretty good regular season team. Like, they could have the one seed fairly easily if they're healthy. My great concern is I think Lakers fans will agree that you're building your team for how it performs in the postseason when you have 37-year-old LeBron James. And a lot of the guys that they brought in, I think, are very one-dimensional and incapable of performing on both ends of the floor in a playoff series, even with LeBron and Anthony Davis, and just how fantastic both of those guys are on the defensive end, and how well they communicate and kind of keep everything in line. There's so much evidence that Carmelo Anthony can't be on the court. Malik Monk's former team, I know they got him on the veterans minimum, and that's a wonderful contract, but like, the Charlotte Hornets and Laker legend Mitch Kupchak were just like, we're not even giving you the qualifying offer. See you later. And they're the team that knows him better than anyone else. Same with Kendrick Nunn, who
we
I think
wish you luck, Malik, with the best Malik of your career.
Thank you for your
support. I hope it's all going to work out just fine, you know. But ultimately, we just decided Malik to move Monk in a different direction.
Drafted from the University of North Carolina. Had a nice career. Not a great career.
He went to Kentucky. By the way, for years, we did this. We learned.
Damn it. My Mitch impression.
We learned that Mitch Kupchak is not a fan of Mitch Kupchak voice.
No. But that's not our problem anymore.
I wonder.
No. He was good to us. Very nice to us, despite the fact that we insisted on doing that voice on radio all the time.
That was his standard filibuster, too, for everything, was going through their biography about where, Malik Monk, University of Kentucky, only played one season in college. Was off the bench, and so even like 3 hours later, you found out what their grades were in middle school.
Right.
And he hasn't actually answered the question.
How tall he is, how much he weighs. Everything.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I question the validity of these pieces competing at a high level in the playoffs through four playoff rounds. Mm-hmm. And I also just wonder, and this isn't like a crisis right now, I have no idea who the closing lineup is going to be, and we can debate all of that. That's a million miles or light years away from where we are right now, of course. But like, if you're closing with AD, LeBron, and Russ, right? I would imagine that Russ is going to be on the floor in crunch time. You're closing with those three. LeBron is a pretty good 3-point shooter at this point in his career. AD was atrocious from behind the line last year and has never really been as consistent of a deep shooter or spacer than his shot form and all those things would have you believe. And we all know about Russell Westbrook. So you need space, but the players that you brought in who can space the floor are also so wretched defensively. I don't know how you make these pieces fit, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Well, coming up after the break, there's a few things that I want to drill down on in terms of just a little bit philosophically with what the Lakers did when it comes to the pretty radical changes you talked about, Michael, with the roster. And then also a little bit about Russ himself with the actual fit and how that potentially can or, I guess, can't work. So we'll talk about that coming up next. Locked On Lakers brought to you by Sweat Block. There are a few things in life they're just not fun to talk about, and one of them is excessive sweating. Like when you are the person that is excessively sweating, you are sweating through all of your clothes for no particular reason. It's like nice 70 degrees outside. That is embarrassing, and I don't want to have to worry about that. So that's why I use Sweat Block antiperspirant wipes. Sweat Block, stronger, more effective, the most clinical antiperspirants. You simply apply it at night before bedtime. The next morning you wake up, you wash, and then you go about your entire day without having to worry about sweat at all. You can use it once or twice a week and stay dry the entire time. That is amazing. It's also guaranteed or your money back. So no more pit stains, no more picking out shirts based or entire wardrobes based on what will hide the sweat better. So let me just put it this way. If you know of another sweat solution that is doctor created, doctor recommended, featured on Rachel Ray's show and tested by firefighters, they know something about sweat. I'm listening, but until then, check out sweatblock.com. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon and CVS.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Indeed. Andy, finding the right people for any job, it's incredibly challenging. It doesn't need to be, though. So when hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple. Just attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all of your hiring in one place, even the interviewing. Centralizes everything, makes it much easier. Don't hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 different skills tests to make sure that you're finding applications from people with the skills that you need. Indeed is the number one source of hires in the U.S. according to Talent Nest, delivering 1.5 times more hires than even internal referrals. And with Indeed Instant Match, over 90% of employers get quality candidates as soon as they sponsor their job post. That's according to Indeed data. So get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. That's a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Michael, you were talking about the changes that this roster made in terms of really abandoning that defensive identity and bringing in a lot of guys who theoretically can bring out a lot more offensively, but there are defensive questions collectively. And I don't think that you're wrong, but in terms of abandoning that identity, I think there's something to be said for the stress that comes from having to play that level of defense over the course of 82 games and the playoffs.
Like all the time, because you can never score. Not,
well, I was going to say, it's not necessarily because it's your identity, but because you have to, as opposed to being like a team like the Warriors that, you know, at their peak could score and defend at an elite level, you know, or like the Heatles at their peak. And it is exhausting for a team to be doing that, you know, really because they have to. And it can be at times disheartening when you put forth all of that effort and you're not rewarded with some baskets. So I guess, A, do you agree with that in terms of it being something that needs to be addressed, you know, like sort of psychologically, spiritually? And then B, do you think the Lakers went too far in that?
I do think they went too far. I think that knowing, you know, we have the good fortune of knowing that there was a Buddy Hield a trade proposal that could have gone down. So when you look at the opportunity cost of moving on from Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma, you keep KCP, you keep Caruso, you keep Schroeder, and you add Buddy Hield. Like,
well, I mean, I got to stop you though. There's certain things there, okay. Like Montrezl Harrell, I think, wanted to move on. I don't think Montrezl Harrell wanted to be with the Lakers any further. The apparent cost that would be required to keep Dennis Schroeder, you know, caused a lot of problems with their negotiations leading up to that point. And I think, you know, obviously LeBron AD wanted to upgrade at that position. And in turn, you know, whatever fit issues you think could be there, Russell Westbrook is much better than Dennis Schroeder. Like, that's not even debatable. Dennis Schroeder, though, there were issues in bringing him back. You know what I mean? Like, I think in some ways running it back, obviously you could have kept KCP, you could have kept Kuzma, you know, could have kept Caruso, that sort of thing. But there were elements of the run it back factor that I think would have been complicated for this team.
No, I think I don't know if it could have been smoothened out with someone like Montrez if Drummond is gone like that. But I get what you're saying about Schroeder's situation and the difficulty there. And you certainly are upgrading at the position with Westbrook. But like, I just,
I mean, I'll say this. I would not want to be Boston with Dennis Schroeder on another 1 year prove it deal.
I'd rather be Boston with Dennis Schroeder on a 1 year prove it deal than the Lakers with Schroeder on a deal that he doesn't like form.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's a better deal for them.
Right. No, I think that fit is fine. I think when we discuss the pieces that came in and the pieces that left in the trade, I like Caruso, letting him go, KCP, I feel like these players were so integral to what the Los Angeles Lakers were. And when you talk about trying to rejigger the balance between defense and offense, like having a player come in like Buddy, like let me throw it to you guys and just get your take on that, because having someone like Buddy Hield come in, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, and figuring out the point guard position elsewhere, let's say Schroeder moves on, I don't like...
Theoretically, you could still bring Kendrick Nunn in. There are things that you can do.
Sure, exactly. And also, like, you know, I think that if the Lakers did everything that they did, and let's say they got Andre Iguodala instead of Trevor Ariza, or they got... Patty Mills instead of
someone,
Nunn or Monk or whoever. Like I like their offseason so much more than it was.
Here's what I think about that. Hield is easier. It is so much easier to go forward with Buddy Hield, who would weaken their defense and do some of the same types of things in terms of potential downsides. But the upside and the fit offensively is so clean to put one of a sort of a generational volume three-point shooter who can shoot in you know, doesn't have to just stand in the corner. He does it from everywhere, every kind of three-pointer. He's really good at it. And he's, you know, he's taken 10 of them a game. So it's not like you have to boost the production or whatever. You put that around LeBron and AD, you're basically saying, we're going to take this LeBron AD model and try to kind of supercharge it. And right. What they did instead was what the Lakers often do, which is, you know what, we'll just, there's a superstar available and we're going to overwhelm with talent. And the talent's going to be so good. We'll figure the rest out. We believe in LeBron. We believe in AD. We believe
we will accept the layers of complication that come with Russell Westbrook that wouldn't come with either the Buddy Hield route or keeping that core intact the way you were talking about it, right. Michael. Like the upside potentially is higher with Westbrook in terms of if you can untap the perfect formula, that upside by definition would be higher. The flip side is it could be much harder to find.
But it's like some of this is so specific to Russ. Like the problems are like Russ, like he is absolutely on that list that I think because like NBA scouting now is so good. You talk about the playoffs, Michael, in the last segment and the difficulty of going through it against good teams with great defenses that can scout you and pick on every weakness. You know, the things that Russ doesn't do well are going to be exploited in the playoffs. There's no question about that. And so Russ is in that group, you know, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons, Russell Westbrook, of obviously elite players who are obviously problematic. How well do you think either Russ can adjust moving off ball, paying more attention defensively, whatever these things are? Because on the one hand, this is probably the best chance he's had to win a title, and he's in kind of a prove it sort of place in his career. But on the other hand, this is not the first time he's been on a high caliber team where, hey, Russ, move off the ball. Hey, Russ, play more attentive defense would be something that's asked of him. So I don't even know how to predict what comes this year.
Right. I mean, look, I was very high on the Russell Westbrook, James Harden partnership 2 years ago. And what the Houston Rockets had to do there was like completely change how they wanted to play basketball and who was going to be on the floor when he was there. And you had to have like, everybody was behind the 3-point line and nobody was cutting because it was like, we have to have driving lanes for Russell Westbrook to get downhill to the rim because that's, and the ball is going to be in his hands. And it was fine. I thought until he suffered an injury. And obviously that season was very weird because of the bubble and COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not like a total Russell Westbrook hater. I just think that
you're pretty close, like, Michael. You're
like,
pretty
like Andy, you talked
Michael,
about
Michael, C minus, Michael, C minus. That's real close to D plus.
That ain't a Russell Westbrook liker.
So, like, I'm just fast forwarding in my head to round two of the playoffs, and you have a Russ Westbrook who led the NBA in mid range shooting last season and shot like 37% of them or something like that. You have, I'm going to give LeBron and AD a pass. Those were the third and fourth least accurate mid-range shooters in the NBA last year. And we're coming off of a postseason where we just saw how integral having top level mid-range shooting and shot creation is. And so if you have those three guys and they get cold for a little while and they can't get to the rim because there's just no space on the floor without sacrificing defense. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a modern effective way to attack opposing defenses that are trying to take you away at the rim and trying to take you away at the 3-point line. And like and Russ Westbrook is going to shoot all those shots. Like you're not, you talk about his adjustment and what he needs to, how he needs to evolve. Russ Westbrook off the ball is like, who knows what he's going to do? I mean, I don't think he's a total zero. I think he can be really effective crashing the glass and, you know, potentially setting off ball screens and that sort of thing. But like,
But before we go to the break and, you know, talk a little bit more about the Lakers, but just also the league in general and some of these other teams that you gave wildly inflated grades to at the expense of the Lakers.
I mean, in fairness, he does want to be able to travel somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, like the A triple plus to some of these other teams, I thought was a little extreme. I mean, I didn't think Sacramento did anything that great to get an A triple plus, but whatever. The idea that a lot of this could, and this is something I've talked about, and I actually think is, if nothing else, theoretically true, Michael. The idea that for Russ, a lot of this is actually in his own control in terms of the success that he has with the Lakers, the success the Lakers have with him being there. Like the idea of committing to being more in motion off ball and having more utility off ball, committing to the idea of really honoring defensive principles, really paying attention to off ball assignments, making sure that you're not ball watching, stuff like that. These are things that Westbrook is, if nothing else, on paper capable of doing because he's that talented. There's also years and years of, I guess you'd call it, bad habits that need to be undone. How much do you think, like, ultimately that success could be there if Russ is willing to commit to? Like, do you think he's capable of doing some of the things that would be needed from him if willing? Or do you think these are things that aren't even in his bag?
I mean, because it's not like, we're not talking about, like, can Russ develop a shot? Like, he's not.
Right. He's not going to be a three-point threat. Right. You can take, you know, 1,000 of these a day. This is not going to happen. But I also reject the idea that that's how you define him off ball, or it's the only way you define him off ball, is whether or not he can space the floor, whether or not you ignore him. I think there are other ways that, if nothing else, he could, but do you think he's capable, much less willing?
I think he's capable, of course. Like, okay. Russ Westbrook, I don't know why I keep calling him Russ Westbrook, but does anyone do that?
I'm sure somebody calls
they call him
Russ,
but never Russ Westbrook. You're correct.
I'm coining that. No, but like Westbrook, when he cuts in on those, like,
it's
45
too formal and informal at the same time.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. Like when he's standing on the weak side, non-corner, and he cuts in to create an opportunity for a teammate, like, you have to pay attention to Russell Westbrook in that scenario. Is he going to do that when he needs to at the right time over and over and over again? Will he want the ball more than, and I think this is on Frank Vogel as well, frankly, to try to put lineups on the floor that make sense for Westbrook to have the ball in his hands more than not, and more than being off ball and not really playing. I think we're getting potentially a little too hung up, or maybe I am, with the three stars always being on the floor together. That's definitely not going to happen next season. So I think that some of those bench units he can definitely thrive in and have a little bit more success than he did in Washington, where their offensive numbers were really bad when Brad Beal was off the floor. But like healthy Russell Westbrook, I think
Brad Beal, by the way, that's everybody calls him that. That's okay.
Yeah.
that's totally acceptable.
Thank you. So I do think that just physically, in terms of his force and his punch and all that, like, yeah, he can sky above a 7-footer and grab an offensive rebound. I want to see that, like, the defensive thing is, that's a whole different bag of worms. I think, sure, he's capable. I think he's a really smart basketball player. Is he going to buy in on a possession to possession basis, not gamble for steals, not jump passing lanes? These are things that he's done for his entire career. So it's only right to assume that he'll continue to do them, but I don't know.
This is what I think is so amazing and fascinating about this, and why, I've picked the Lakers to get to the finals because I would have had them in the finals anyway. And we'll talk about the rest of the conference here and what else is going on here in a sec. But I agree with you. This, and I think most people talk about this in the context of Lakers win a title versus Lakers don't win a title, not like the Lakers get a C- from Michael Pena in the offseason. I'm really worried they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think that's exactly what you're getting at, not to put words in your mouth. But it's all based on the playoffs, because I agree with you. I think from a regular season standpoint, in terms of fueling the second unit and having better non-LeBron minutes and, you know, Westbrook's energy, getting them through those 20 games in January where nobody wants to play, like, they're going to benefit from that. It's,
absolutely.
But it's just, is this what gets them to a title? And part of that is based on what else is going on in the conference and around the rest of the league. So let's look at some of the other teams that you've written about in the context of that. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it is impossible to stock all the parts you would need in a traditional chain storefront. And it doesn't matter anyway, because why would you spend 30%, 50%, 100% more for the exact same parts at a chain store or new car dealership? You fool. You can get it for...
I wouldn't do that. No.
No, no. That's just being taken like you're a sheeple or something like that. RockAuto.com, a sheeple that drives. That's the much better option. For example, Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 from a chain store. It's only $216 from Rock Auto. They're a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So whether it's for a classic or a daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to RockAuto.com right now. See everything available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
So who do you see, Michael, as like the rival here? Because I'm part of, again, my calculation here is Phoenix is there. I think Utah is going to be very good in the regular season, but still is in a little bit of a prove it stage. You know, Golden State, things have to happen right. The Clippers are missing Kawhi. The Nuggets are missing Jamal Murray. Like, who is there to keep the Lakers from getting to the finals, do you think?
Well, you just named all the good teams in the West. So
right, but I'm just not sure any of them are good enough. You might think they're better than I do or better than the Lakers, you know, or comparable to them at least.
No, I think that, I'm pretty high on the Utah Jazz. I really love their offseason. I think that, you know, everybody is very much a prisoner of the moment and how they lost against the Los Angeles Clippers with Terrence Mann just hitting like 19 strong side corner threes and Rudy Gobert really struggling to get out there. I think they addressed that a little bit with some of the moves that they made this offseason. I think that health is the big variable here. If Donovan Mitchell is healthy in that series, if Mike Conley is healthy in that series, I think that the Utah Jazz probably win it, and the Utah Jazz could have won the championship if they got out of that round. And so I really like Utah. I also think that Utah matches up better. I mean, if we're just talking about like how these teams are fair in a potential series or matchups against the Los Angeles Lakers, like, it's really interesting because like, what do we think LeBron is going to look like at age 37 in round two or round three of a postseason, assuming that he actually plays a good chunk of this regular season? And
godlike.
I'm writing about sure,
like
maybe.
27-year-old LeBron James. What do you think?
No, very possible, but it is worth just asking the question.
Oh, for sure.
No, absolutely.
And, you know, Anthony Davis, I'm going to be writing about Anthony later this week or next week. You know, he's coming off statistically one of the worst seasons of his career after in the bubble. I thought he was the best player on the planet, the best healthy player on the planet. Like, what is Anthony Davis going to look like this season with all these different pieces around him and him really needing to be a defensive player of the year on a night-to-night basis, I think.
Yes.
So I think that these are questions to ask about the Lakers when we kind of talk about the field.
Are the Lakers, I don't mean to cut you off here, are the Lakers the same team in the playoffs in the sense that if you put, you mentioned putting finding ways to put the ball in Westbrook's hands more in the regular season, you split up the big three, you find all those arrangements that were in the playoffs though, can the formula, do you think if they find a winning formula there, can it also work in the playoffs? Because my other big concern is that if you're putting the ball in Russ's hands, as good as I think Westbrook is, that means you are kind of fundamentally taking it out of LeBron's. And
correct,
that ultimately is a win for the other team because LeBron is better than Westbrook. So yeah, I'm a little worried that they're two different teams when it comes to the playoffs.
I think you're right. I mean, like, fundamentally, if Russell Westbrook's usage, which has over the past few years been ridiculous, if that's higher than Anthony Davis's, let alone LeBron's. I mean, there's just like a problem there. That's just not how you want to function as a basketball team trying to win the title if you have those other two guys. So it's just, I don't know how all these players, where they get their shots, how they get their shots when all three of them are on the floor together. That's just going to be really interesting to see, frankly, because, you know, one of the great things about LeBron over the years has been just his ability when push comes to shove to just go to the post and I'm either going to score or I'm going to get fouled or you're going to double me and I'm going to kick it out and we're going to get a good look. And like, is that a sustainable or effective type of offensive strategy with the pieces that are around? I don't know. It's just going to be really interesting to see. So, I think there'll be a lot of evolution mid-season to the end of the season and to the playoffs with how this team functions offensively. And it's, I don't envy Frank Vogel at all in trying to figure
I almost
it
feel
out.
Like well, it's Andy, like, it's almost gonna be like starting over, like you almost not throw everything out that we learned in the regular season, but I don't know.
I'm gonna be fascinated
to see how many lessons transfer from the regular season to the postseason. I don't know the answer to that.
Here's my thing. I feel like if you've landed on a formula that works for these three guys together, I think by definition, it's going to be something that actually works in the playoffs, because the idea of, you know, if you put the ball in Russ's hands, you're taking it out of LeBron's hands, therefore you're weakening yourself. That's not necessarily so if you figured out the best way to use LeBron off ball with Westbrook there. Like, I think if you figure out how to do it with
LeBron and Westbrook on the floor together, but if it's predicated on the two of them not being on the floor together as much, then it
matters. Here's the thing though. If you can't figure out how to use the two of them together on the floor, forget the fact that you're not going to win a championship. You likely didn't figure out the regular season. So that's why I reject the premise to begin with.
You're rejecting
like the
a lot
idea
of
that
today.
Some Well, just the idea that you somehow have figured out some magical formula that works awesome in the regular season, you know, between three guys that theoretically are difficult to put together. So by definition, if you figured out a way to work, it's got to be something pretty solid. All of a sudden, it falls apart in the playoffs for all the reasons that in theory, it would fall apart in the regular season.
I don't mean fall apart, but like if you were playing these guys 30 minutes a night and then jumps up to 37 or 38, they're going to be sharing the dynamic of how often they're sharing the floor. All those things changes, the scouting changes. We'll have time to debate this between now and then.
Okay. Let me turn this on its head though, then to Michael. If it does work for the Lakers, why is it? Why does it ultimately end up working in your mind? Picture in your mind, Michael, scenario where the Lakers are not a C-minus team.
Right. Look, the moment where you look back in abject horror and you say, what did I do?
I would say if it works, I don't know if this is like a hot take or anything. I think that Anthony Davis has to be the best player on the team. I think that he needs to be a
when you like say best player on the team, do you mean like most complete player, like both sides, that sort of thing?
I think he needs to be what he was in the bubble, more or less, just like hitting, you know, 50% of his mid-range jumpers, getting to the line like way more than he did during the regular season this year. Providing consistent, I mean, his block rate was the lowest of his entire career this past season.
He wasn't good last year.
No. And so like, he needs to be a defensive player of the year, and he needs to not shoot 26% behind the 3-point line. He needs to not shoot in the low 40s from the mid range. He just needs to be excellent, and he needs to take a lot of his shots at the rim and I think he will, because I think Russ can get downhill, et cetera. But I think that Anthony Davis needs to be the best player on the team without LeBron declining to the point where he is not also he's LeBron James. It's like very obvious, the things that I'm saying, and none of this is like a revelation, but like,
no,
if
but
it's
you know
going
what though
work,
I actually
those
I disagree
two need to be
with
excellent
you. I think there is so much attention paid to LeBron and Westbrook that AD is getting a little bit lost in this equation. And, you know, Andy and I were on, Spectrum Sports, the local TV, you know, the Lakers TV station here, mm-hmm. and answer that question, who leads the team in scoring? And we both said AD, but that is fundamentally different than who is your best player. And I don't think you're wrong to point out that all this stuff about AD, and I don't think it's that obvious because I don't think people are talking about him as much. It's a good point.
He actually, Bet Online has their early odds for futures, including MVP. Russ has slightly better odds than AD for MVP, which A, we both found kind of fascinating, but B, I think speaks to what Brian's talking about with AD being a bit of an afterthought, and I think makes your point about AD needing to be at that level to unlock everything, Michael, I think actually a pretty interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ceiling raiser, and he's the guy who is in his prime. Like none of these, like Russell Westbrook and LeBron James, are not in their primes right now, athletically or any other way. Anthony Davis should still be improving, also. And so when we look at, like, I thought coming out of the bubble, you know, the conditions were just didn't make this possible because they had like a month between winning the championship and going to training camp. And AD talked about it all year about how troubling that was. And his body clearly couldn't deal with it. But I thought coming out of the bubble that there was no reason why he shouldn't be a front runner for MVP the following season. Like I assumed that the Lakers would be really good. I assumed that he would have ascended to being kind of the face of a franchise as much as anyone could be with LeBron James as a teammate. And why can't that happen this season?
As somebody who drafted him third in his fantasy league last year, I also expected that to be true. And I think we underestimated the impact collectively. I think underestimated the impact of the short off season and sure. kind of forgot some of those other things. But a year delayed with a much longer break and I think some motivation here could be the thing. Go check it out. Check out all the off-season grades. Check out the podcast, The Open Floor with Rohan Nadkarni. They did a great episode, by the way, if you missed it, on duos, some of the great duos in the NBA, which Michael was kind enough to take a break from being yelled at by us, from being yelled at by America. So that, everybody hated him for that. So
I cannot believe you ranked LeBron and AD 17th for best duo in the league. Like that felt.
I mean, is that a C-minus duo? I mean, I thought that was a little much.
No, I do think that Spencer Dinwiddie and Rui Hachimura are really going to give them a run for their money this season. So
no, I look, man. I mean,
those, are we talking about Bitcoin? Because if that's the case, like crypto, maybe it is. But the content is great. The work over at Sports Illustrated is great. Make sure you follow him on all the socials and listen to his podcast. Michael, thanks so much for coming on, man. Let's do this again.
You guys are the best. Thanks so much.